Welcome to Head Over Feels, the podcast where we discuss matters of the heart while also using our heads, blending emotional awareness with intellectual relationship skills.
We promise raw, real, and sometimes ridiculous advice on love, sex, and relationships.
I'm Megan Sundra.
And I'm Fernando DV. We're here to tag team you with juicy insights, tantalizing tools, and sometimes embarrassing anecdotes in order to help you have the best love life ever.
On this week's episode, we'll be answering letters about excessively triggered jealousy of exes, broken condom drama, getting tied up too loosely, and the 3-minute game. These are going to be fun.
Yeah. When you hear it out of context and on a sex show, you're like, what is the 3-minute game? Uh-huh. Is it really a game?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can't wait to tell you guys about that because it is a very like educational tool and a fun thing to try. And also I'll tell you about how I messed it up one time. How I did it wrong, but it turned out oh so right.
And in case you're wondering, it's not about coming in 3 minutes. That's,
right.
But that could be a fun game.
Hey, it could be part of it. That's true. Oh, we want to remind everybody that if you want to get one-on-one coaching with us, if you have a fight that's going on over and over in your relationship, if you're looking for more intimacy, how to increase your trust or improve your communication, we can help you with that. So go to headoverfeelspod.com/coaching to schedule a free discovery call with us and learn more about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we want to cover anything else?
I think that's it.
That's probably good. Okay.
All right. Let's get into these letters. This first one was super specific, so I'm happy to get into this one.
Totally. Okay. Our first letter comes from Jolena, a 42-year-old gay woman. She writes, "Hi, Meg and Fern. I've been dating my girlfriend for about 10 months now, and she's the best match I've found so far for so many things in my life. Humor, hobbies, adventures, sex. But there's this issue that keeps coming up, and it's getting way worse. She's super jealous of my past relationships, even the ones long gone. If she sees me texting other women while we're hanging out, she asks who it is, if it was my ex, why I feel the need to be nurturing other options, etc. I don't like her being so nosy, but I want to be as transparent as possible to show her I'm not doing anything shady, and I've explained to her a dozen times that my feelings are in the past for those exes, but some of them I've remained great friends with and hate having to cut them off, although she hasn't demanded I do so. The smallest things trigger her. She found a small jar in my bathroom cupboard of infused oils an ex had made for me with the ex's name signed on the label, and she flipped out. She says she has the right to not be constantly reminded of all my exes, how it makes her feel unimportant, and that since I have so many exes, it's just a matter of time before I move on. I find myself not keeping up with many of my friends and exes because of this, and being paranoid, she'll find some other reminder in my life of things to be jealous about. I want her to work on this herself, maybe get therapy, but she says her feelings are valid and she's totally normal for feeling this way and expecting these things. I'm out of ideas and exhausted. What can I do?"
Just break it up. Oh, God, that was so harsh. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear you're running into such a frustrating. I think a lot of us can relate to that, Jolena. I would agree to some point that your partner is right in that, you know, her feelings are valid.
True.
And what she's feeling is valid. What she's expecting. That's when it gets a gray area. Mm-hmm. It's like your feelings are valid, but how you respond to those feelings, that's where it becomes problematic.
Exactly.
And this is one of those cases where they're almost using their jealousy and insecurity as sort of like a
weapon of control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, you handed them to me.
And that obviously becomes a problem because now I'm hearing maybe just a little resentment, maybe mm-hmm. a little more than just resentment. And it's not very fair to you or really to anyone who has to deal with that, that they are – you're just having connections with people. You're not doing anything that's out of line. You haven't given any indicators or shown dishonesty in some mm-hmm. way. And they're kind of working on this based on assumption that if it's an ex, then it can't be a trustworthy action. Mm. And that's not fair to you because I don't know if they have past traumas or other experiences that have informed this sort of perspective.
I would guess so, maybe.
Yeah. That makes the most sense. Mm-hmm. But it's not for you to be just taking it on and just accepting it like this is the only reality. You can set boundaries here and you can set some hard expectations and that you want to be respected and you want to be trusted. And if you're doing all the things and going through the emotions to like, you know, help them feel secure and making clear that, you know what, there's nothing else going on here with my exes. And if you're not willing to listen and trust me, then I don't, what do you need from me to feel that way? And if that's not, if I, you know, meet that thing and it still isn't enough, then we need to assess if this is like, are we going to continue? Is this the dance we're going to continue on? Because it seems like nothing's working, you know?
Yeah.
You can only tell them, your partner, so many things before it's like, you know, there's nothing you can do on your end that's going to change their perspective. Mm-hmm. That's shit they have to take on. And if they don't, you know, we have to be willing just to, you know, move on. I know they're a great fit in other ways, but it doesn't overshadow like some of this stuff that just can bleed into your relationship, which it sounds like that's where we're at now.
Totally. Yeah, I would say it's a her problem, not a you problem, Jolena. Yeah. Like... And it's all each of our own independent, as an independent person, it's our own responsibilities to manage our own emotions and to work on our own triggers or traumas. And also, it is your partner's responsibility to be supportive of you and validating of you in your process, but not to do it for you. Mm-hmm. Like, they can be beside you, but not necessarily always leading you or holding your hand through your own process. I mean, that's why we pay therapists to do it. Yes. Instead of our unpaid therapist partners, right? Which we're all guilty of doing. Yeah. Totally. And I think your relationship would be happier if she did some work and took some responsibility for the way that she's like taking out her feelings on you in this relationship and how she's using her own preferences as like demands on you. There's like a boundary issue there somewhere. Mm-hmm. I think that's happening. You could try explaining that, you know, all the things that she sees in your life are artifacts of your past and that they are the building blocks of who you are today and that your experiences, even when they were difficult, have made you a better person, have made you into the person that she's in love with. So in a sense, she should be grateful for these exes that have given you value to your life, right?
Yeah.
And like, our exes enrich our lives, even if they were shitty. Hopefully we learned lessons from the ones that were shitty. And the ones we choose to stay in touch with can still provide amazing insight into who we are, amazing friendships, adventures, experiences. And it's an unfortunate product of what I think is toxic monogamy that we're expected to like never talk to our exes ever again.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I see some emotional immaturity on her part, and I question why she isn't friends with her exes. Or I assume she's not, if she's upset that you are with yours. So that's an interesting thing to look into. Mm. But it sounds like this is ballooned out of proportion. It's been going on long enough that you might have to put your foot down and be like, look, I feel constantly attacked. And, you know, that our relationship is being destabilized by you, like, pointing out and calling out all these things. I've done everything within reason to, like, quote unquote, protect you from things that might make you jealous. But I can't do more than that. And if you can't like meet me halfway in your efforts, I don't know if this relationship is something I can continue to tolerate this within. Mm. Like, I'm in the present, I'm in the here and now with you. And like, if you can't trust me that that's true, I don't know what else I can do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It sounds like you've done probably about everything.
Can't remember every last detail, like some jar of oil, right? Like, we can't comb through our lives.
Yeah.
And be that specific, you know?
Yeah. I think something that commonly happens when we're in relationships and that when everything is good on something, that it's easy for us to overlook maybe some really big red flags.
Mm.
And I don't want to say that this relationship is not unworkable going forward, mm-hmm. but we need to be able to be, you know, take pause and say, okay, like this is something that we want to address. We can't just gloss over because you're a match on every other level,
mm-hmm.
because this is a thing that it's big enough that you've written nuts to us and you've reached out probably to other people to talk about.
Right.
And so, you know, we're not responsible for other people's growth.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Yeah. Insert phrase about horse drinking water.
Oh, shit. Yeah. It's back.
Yeah. And yeah, she's got a, you're in, you know, you could maybe offer some things to her. You say, hey, like, I, this is something that feels like it's getting out of hand because I'm no longer able just to interact with you without it being like this, you know, it's, your feelings are valid, but this feels like it's emotionally exhausting to hold space for this every time. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it every day this week or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, so, I feel like I'm on trial by you constantly.
Yeah. So I need to know what you're going to do to work on this. Mm-hmm. So like you can hold them accountable. If they say nothing, I think that gives you a very clear answer of how to skip to the very beginning thing I said and then call it good.
Right.
But ideally that they would say that maybe they're not sure what to do. You can offer some assistance there. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's not, you know, it's not your circus.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think she might be, if I were to speculate on where she's coming from with this, these feelings about these artifacts in your life, is there's some, like, maybe she has a lack of experience or tools in managing her own emotions or communicating them in a way that's non-accusatory. It might also be that, you know, the insecurity of your own worthiness or importance to your partner may come out when you start feeling like you're in competition to people of their past, right? Like, imagine the type of person who wants you to erase all trace of ever having any ex, right? Like, pretend that it's only ever been me that you've ever loved. You know what I mean? Like, all those other people, tell me they were meaningless to you. Like, show me that I'm the one person that is important to you, right?
Yeah.
That's essentially asking for this fantasy version of the utmost, highest importance to them, which, I mean, we all want to feel significant. I think it's a primal need. We love being prioritized in relationships, hence the draw towards monogamy or hierarchical polyamory. And I think that's okay to want that. I think it's not okay when it goes into unhealthy versions of what that looks like. So asking your partner to pretend they had no exes or they didn't like their exes or they're no longer meaningful to them is an unreasonable ask, in my opinion, and just feeds an unhealthy belief about your own primacy and importance in their life. Mm-hmm. So there's other ways she could get her need met. So she could say, like, if it's words of affirmation or, you know, future planning together, perhaps shows her importance to you. Or just like an occasional reassurance of like, this is the here and now. I'm so glad my path led me to you kind of statements. Like those could be really meaningful. But yes, I think that has to happen in tandem with her own work. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Jolena.
Yeah.
This is definitely an issue that I've heard from other people before. So it happens. Yeah.
You can probably tell we spend several hours each week creating these juicy podcast episodes for y'all, and we do it because we love you, and we want you to have the best love life ever. While the show is free for you to listen to, it does cost us time, money, and energy to create. If you've learned something new, received valuable advice, or had a few laughs, we'd appreciate you donating the cost of a cup of coffee each month via Patreon. Your support helps keep this podcast free for everyone and sustains our ongoing growth and mission to open the hearts and minds of people everywhere about relationships and sexuality. For just $5 a month, you'll get a bonus episode each month, the ability to vote on spotlight topics, and prioritization of your letter in our submission queue. There are additional subscription levels with even more tantalizing goodies, so go to patreon.com/headoverfeelspod to subscribe. That's patreon.com/headoverfeelspod.
How do you suppose that we stay in those relationships way longer than they've expired? Mm. Gosh, that sounds so hard.
Ouch.
That's where my levels today. The filter's gone.
Sunk cost fallacy.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And for those who are not familiar with the sunk cost fallacy, tell them again.
It's like when you invested so much in something, your brain has to retroactively justify why you invested at all in it. Mm-hmm. And so like you've spent so much time and energy with someone, you're like, well, this person must be so important. Like this relationship must be worth saving at all costs because like I've done so much and like I would hate to have wasted all that time, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like a misattribution of importance to the things that we've spent a lot of time and investment with. Maybe also oxytocin. Like there's a lot of chemicals going on. If you have a lot of fun with your partner, you have a lot of great sex, like you could really justify a lot of things with good sex. You know, you can overlook a lot of bullshit, I think. Just me? Anybody?
Yeah. I don't think so. I think you're not the only one.
Again, this podcast is just for calling myself out. Let's be honest.
It's a good, it's a collective effort.
I don't know. Why do you think?
I think it's, I think part of it's tied to how we view ourselves in relationships.
Okay.
You know, we see when we're in a relationship, we maybe see a boosted version of ourselves, like, oh, we're desired, we're wanted. And as such, like, someone is investing time and energy into us. And so I think sometimes it's the illusion that aloneness or singleness is a horrible state to be in. And you're like, oh, I remember how much dating apps fucking suck. Mm. So I don't want to go through that again.
True.
and then, but then when you start getting all the reminders of like, oh, this is why when my partner doesn't want to admit 6 months in that we're in a relationship or whatever the case is, and they're doing X, Y, and Z, then we're reminded very clearly, like, okay, this person isn't, they're not ready for an emotional relationship or whatever the case is. So maybe it's like we want to see people, we want to see the best of people. We're like, oh, I've seen them at their best and they're so shiny and wonderful. But it's easy for us in those moments to like forget that they're telling you exactly who they are.
Mm.
You're like, oh, like when people say, oh, I'm bad at math, ha ha ha, or I'm a jealous person, ha ha ha. They're not joking. There's a weird thing that we do where we say the joke, but we actually mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing we're talking about is the truth. So we're just trying to like, you know, downplay it a little bit. And we need to listen to those cues. And from that point, we decide whether, you know, is that something workable or do we realize this, you know, we're incompatible? It doesn't mean it has to be an ugly breakup. It doesn't mean that you have to throw each other's stuff out the window or whatever. It's more like we need to say like, this isn't workable. Like what my needs are and what I'm getting from this relationship are not compatible. And it sounds so transactional. Like we are not compatible anymore. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
I'm effectively terminating this relationship. Thank you for completing your term. Like, good day to you. But yeah, we just got to keep an eye out for that.
Those are really legit. Yeah. Thank you for that insight, Fernando. Yeah. I think those are really good points. Obviously. And we all tend to overlook that when, you know, there's like that inertia of staying in a relationship for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we justify it to our friends, but we go back and forth and we hem and haw about it.
Yeah. We tell our friends how much we don't want to be in a relationship, but then we're with it and we're like,
God.
Oh, and you're like, yo, you've told me you spent more time talking about how much you're like over your boyfriend than you want to be in that relationship.
True. That's an important thing to examine. I think we should all ask ourselves when and why do we do that?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, now that I just got that tangent out of the way.
I love it.
Yeah. Let's go on to our next question. This one is from Johnny Q, a 24-year-old gay man. And he writes, hi, guys. My boyfriend and I recently opened up our relationship, but neither of us have really acted on it, mostly due to COVID. Until about a month ago, I started dating a new guy. Not sure how serious it's going to get, but we've been having sex frequently, and he's been a bright spot in my life lately. So I'm really grateful. My boyfriend, not so much. He's been hesitant and suspicious of this guy, but personally, I think he's just projecting his discomfort about us opening up. But whatever. Anyways, recently when me and the new guy were hooking up, the condom broke. No idea why. That's never happened to me. I told my boyfriend right away when I got home, and he was pretty upset and acting weird around me, like he thought I was unsafe or dirty now or something. But honestly, both he and the new guy haven't been tested in a few years because they'd both only been in a long-term monogamous thing with other people for those years. But I have been tested recently. So isn't it them who needs to prove to me they're STI free? Ooh, I like the rhyming there. I think my boyfriend's got it backwards. Can you settle this?
Yeah. You all should be tested. But it is primarily them if they're the ones who don't know their status. Like you're saying that you were tested recently, so you have like updated data on the level of risk you posed to them independently, but you don't know their level of risk they pose to you unprotected. So yeah, they need to go get their butts in to get tested.
Yeah.
ASAP.
This is the episode of short answers. Yeah, the first answer is the only thing near. But if you want the details, let's get into it.
I mean, I could see how they may have inaccurately stigmatized you. I mean, especially your boyfriend, which you say like you came home to. So I assume like maybe you're cohabitating. So perhaps you're suddenly this new exposure to him. And he's like, oh, shit, you're an unknown now. So I kind of get where he's coming from emotionally, but it's not super rational. I mean, you have increased the risk to him because you just had accidental unprotected sex, right? But he was not acknowledging his own risk in the situation, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the shamey part of it.
No.
For the boyfriend. Like, it's like, you didn't choose to this. You didn't, like, poke a hole or, right. I don't know. You didn't like, sabotage the condom for it to happen.
Yeah.
Like, these things are going to happen. Like, condom falls off. Condom gets stuck. And you'll find, sometimes you find out a little bit too late. So it's like, how do we effectively be, like, how can we actually blame someone for something that's out of their control?
Yeah.
And so you can say, like, hey, I don't appreciate being, like, put on, you know, I'll put on the spot and being accused of like making a malicious action here when this was something that happened without any sort of, you know, intervention of any sort. And so I, you know, I would probably also ask him for some ownership there. Like, hey, look, I understand that this is maybe presenting a potential health risk, but I agree with what you're saying. Like, I need you to be getting tested regularly. If we're going to be opening up, we want to make sure that everyone is being tested regularly. So I probably also said that as with your new boyfriend as well. It's like, as a baseline, regular testing with everyone, maybe even have it, you know, every quarter or every time before you go and explore with a new partnership.
Right.
But something that, and then either share it, you know, throw it on your Google Drive or have it so where you can share it with people. Mm-hmm. So that way they have a visual evidence. Some people are okay with verbal. I like to say, hey, I'm using it to text, you know, the results to you. Just scratch out your personal information.
Right, right. Your social security number, yeah.
Yeah. And just like, so that way, peace of mind. So if everyone is aware what they're dealing with. But that all being said, I do side with you that I think there's nothing wrong with, you know, this happened, it sucks, and it's time to like move forward with it. But I would ask for your partner to also just, I don't know, check their shit and not like fly off the handle, because how would you feel if the same thing happened to you?
Yeah.
And I came at you like, oh, you're just being fucking sleazy, or I don't know, whatever they said. Mm-hmm. Like, that would not feel very supportive. It would kind of feel like I was being attacked, and like I was, and even though I was giving you full disclosure, I was being transparent.
Yeah.
I told you as soon as I was aware. So I'm doing everything to be as accountable as possible. And then you go, you turn around and flip it on me. Like, that sounds like you got some shit that is not, you're not dealing with. And I understand if things are a little tense because we've opened up a relationship.
Yeah.
But let's talk about it. Don't just take it out on me just because you're feeling whatever you're feeling. And it's fine for you to feel what you're feeling, but don't take it out on me.
There you go. That's very insightful. Thank you for calling that out, because I got a little squicked out too when I read that. I was like, I'm hearing like slut shame vibes going on there. Yeah. I don't like it. Well, good luck, Johnny Q, and I hope everybody is totally fine and that there's no crisis, but I can understand that it's stressful in the moment when it happens, because there's suddenly a lot of unknowns. So I hope those unknowns become knowns soon. What was that Dick Cheney quote about, like, we know what we don't know, but we don't know what we can't know, or some shit about like known unknowns and unknown unknowns?
Oh, yeah. I think there's other places to say this, like, yeah, like, you know what you know, but then you don't know what you don't know.
You're true,
like,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, that makes I follow the logic.
Yeah. It's just almost funnier when he says it, because he's just like a ghoul. All right, and letter number three comes from Ball of Yarn, a 24-year-old straight woman. I love that you guys are getting creative with the names. This is very entertaining.
I wonder what the reference is here.
Yeah, if it is related, because I think it is based on what I read. Okay. She writes, I've recently started dating a super hot but pretty vanilla guy who I really want to try out some kinky stuff with, especially since my last boyfriend was not even remotely interested in it, and I was with him for 4 years, so I haven't had a chance to really experiment with anyone yet. I know I'm kinky to some degree, but I just don't know what I'm into until I try it, you know? Oh, an unknown unknown.
Oh, you don't know what you don't know.
So last week I told this guy I wanted him to tie me up in bed. He was intrigued and tried to tie me up a bit that night, just kind of experimentally wrapping a long sash around me in different ways, but not actually making knots. I liked that he was trying out ideas, but it didn't turn me on at all because it wasn't real bondage in any way. And he's usually more dominant, but seemed kind of off his game while we were doing that. I did appreciate his effort, and I think it's a good sign we could try again and have a better time. But I don't know how to tell him what I want. I've watched a little porn, but it's not really my thing, and none of my friends talk about this stuff. Any advice, or am I just being a classic noob?
Oh, thanks for writing in. Well, we are. Mm-hmm. I'm still not getting the how they would tie
it. It sounded like she was writing about being just like draped with the sash in a haphazard, messy way, like just being like kind of wrapped up with string.
Oh, kind of like a ball of yarn. Okay. I was looking for a cat reference. I'm like, nothing.
Gotcha. I mean, if you dig hard enough, I bet you could find a cat reference anywhere, but that's just me, child of the internet, right. You know?
Well, thank you for writing in, Bolivar. There are plenty of things we can actually do here. YouTube is going to be your friend. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far you can get on YouTube with some of the more kinky stuff. I'd imagine there's... You could probably find enough stuff about bondage on there. Mm-hmm.
Search for like Shibari tutorials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's plenty of books on it. There are, there may be local classes that you could do. I would imagine there's probably some way you could do it online where you can like buy some rope, take a class online, or if it's available in person, and then get to actually test being tied up. Because it sounds like right now you aren't sure what you're looking for, but you know what you're kind of like, you have an idea what you want to try, but you're not sure what it is yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any mention of monogamy or polyamory here.
Yeah, I can't tell.
So something, if you want to explore this with this person together, then maybe that would be like it could be just like a game of you two, like do some homework. Mm-hmm. Let's both pick 5 things that sound interesting as far as in the kink realm. Ooh. and then let's try it. Let's bring our research here and like let it be sort of like a, all right, I want to talk about butt plugs, shibari, foot play. I don't know. I am.
Ooh, kink homework.
Yeah.
That sounds so exciting.
Yeah, you get the idea. But basically, it'd be some way for you both to come together and then see where your homework lines up and whatever. Mm. Like, oh, that sounds interesting. So then maybe you both spend some time researching together, watch some videos, like professional, you know, some videos of people who know what they're talking about and explaining the ropes to you. I'm a little fizzled out, but I know I'm here for
that. That's a good one. If that was your last of the day, you ended on a good one. That was really good.
But in that way, and then it ultimately comes down to experimentation. If you are polyamorous or open to or open relationship or some or even open to the agreeable like kink play or kink partner, maybe this would be a good opportunity for you to find kink partner. Because if you don't know what you don't know, then it's I think the probably the best way to find out is to have to actually get to experience it. And maybe working with someone who's also a novice could be fun, but I don't know. I found that when I really got into something, it was whenever someone much more experienced than me showed me how to do, you know, got to explore with it. And then once I got to experience it, I'm like, okay, I know I like this or definitely not don't like this. But that also depends on like your agreements in your relationship. Mm-hmm. Are you looking for, so you can also have a kink partner that is non-sexual as well. Just more of an experiment, you know, someone that you can develop trust and feel safe with. And yeah, just explore your own like sensations and your limits in a sense.
Yeah, that's all really good advice. I think since you guys are both inexperienced, it could be a little bit of the blind leading the blind. So calling in an expert will really kickstart your journey, which I think you can continue together without too much outside participation if you don't want. But I would search for like bondage community in your city, you know, like play around with different search terms that way. There are sometimes bondage gyms, bondage studios. Find the local munch. That's usually like the kink community's non-sexual hangout. It's mm-hmm. often monthly, and you can just show up and be like, hi, everyone. I'm like new to this community. I'm excited to just meet people. My partner and I are trying to explore bondage. We have no idea where to start. And you will get piled on by people enthused to share their knowledge with you. Mm-hmm. And then you can take what you like and leave what you don't like. And, you know, searching for like how to start learning bondage, how to experiment with bondage, how to, you know, learn your limits and your boundaries is really important too. So going slow, communicating as you go is really crucial and can incredibly deepen your connection with this partner because it's such an intimate thing to be very vulnerable and trying things you've never tried and being tied in awkward positions and suddenly feeling very exposed. Can be very deep psychological and spiritual work. So I think it's lovely that you both are open and interested and willing to experiment. It's a really good sign that he just wanted to freestyle with the sash, even though it didn't actually bind you in any way. Those are great signs. I think perhaps also seeking out someone who is a rope expert in the shibari or bondage community who you could perhaps hire for a lesson, like clothed platonic lesson where this person could show you like basic knots, things to look out for in terms of cutting off circulation or non-ergonomic positions, things like that. And then you can start with really simple things like bondage that just, you know, a simple tying your hands together in front of you and then maybe tying them over your head or maybe tying one arm down and leaving the other free, like really not going full ham right away in any way that would be physically dangerous or psychologically scarring if it just gets too intense and it's difficult to unwrap very quickly if you're not experienced. So I think there's a lot of people and resources you can learn from out there. And I love the idea Fernando had of making it a communal effort, you know, joint homework.
Yeah. And, you know, and you mentioned that something else that comes to mind is that you could say what feels like more entry level ways to get into this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if someone is not a rope expert, but they do sell these contraptions, I don't know what the hell they call them, they wrap under the bed and they're just little cuffs that go around each limb. Mm-hmm. So then that can, and if you tighten it well enough, that gives you the feeling of being restricted. Mm-hmm. So that way now your limbs aren't, you know, then you could do stuff like blindfolding, maybe some mm-hmm. sensation play of like something soft or light touches, get a little spiky wheel thing. I know there's a name for it and I can't think of what it's called. Totally. And run that over your partner's body, candle wax, you know, maybe read up on it unless you're okay with just some burning. But you know, those are things that you could say are on the safer side that don't, you know, require very little knowledge. And if anything doesn't feel good, you know, just stop mm-hmm, right away. Mm-hmm. So this will also be great for you too, if you aren't already working on your safe word, conversation and talking about consents, because, you know, no means no, or if you want to do a safe word instead. So if Sarah Jessica Parker is going to be your safe word.
Oh my God, stop calling me out. I'll never live that one down.
We got to make this self-referential. Otherwise,
it's all totally funny. I'll take it.
Then we want to make sure that we declare that stuff. So it doesn't look like, it, you know, if you're like, I don't want to go balls deep into this, but I wanted to like just dip my toes in, then you can look for those like kind of like easy things, you know, mm-hmm. like the easy cuffs or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe buy some like fuzzy handcuffs and start there. Mm. Don't lose the key.
Yeah.
Or make sure it's something
Do ones with keys at all, I think, to start off with.
Yeah.
There's easy ones like Velcro, where it's strong enough that it's really hard to wriggle out of, buckles that are very adjustable and also easy to unbuckle really quickly. Mm. The straps that you were describing, super easy. Just throw it under any mattress. I like that because it takes the pressure off your partner to come up with very elaborate knots. Because sometimes shibari can be really intimidating to people because it's complex. You have a lot to learn. There's entire books and classes on this. And that can be a lot to a newbie, right? Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this may ease the pressure on your partner, who it sounds like is going to be the one doing the tying most of the time. So if you want to invite somebody into a new kink, like lower the bar for success as much as possible. Just make that barrier to entry as low barrier as possible.
Yeah.
That way he can lose himself in the enjoyment of the experience. Whereas it sounded like in your letter, he was a little off his game, as you put it. Like, so maybe his confidence was feeling a little shaky. He was in new territory. Like, what am I doing? What does she want? I don't know what I'm doing. I don't want to hurt her. All kinds of stuff could be going through his head. So you can help him along that process too.
Well, we hope this gave you some ideas and kind of a spur of the moment. And yeah, make it a fun process. It doesn't have to be stressful. Like, he's got to like figure out how to be a kink, I don't know, master or a dom in the next week or so. Just like start with one thing at a time. And, you know, ultimately you just have to figure out whether you like the thing or not.
Yeah. Have fun, ball of yarn.
Oh, I can get a reference for that. Like, ball of yarn, like cats play with a ball of yarn.
Ooh.
And so she wants to be played with, but she's not sure what way she wants to play.
Oh, I like that.
I guess. That's super I don't cute. Know. I've been watching it the whole time.
I knew you'd find a cat reference somewhere. Just think about it long enough.
So her toolbox is something called the 3-minute game.
Yeah, this is an exercise invented by Betty Martin, which you can see more about at bettymartin.org. She does a lot of like educating and exercises around consent. And this game is related to a tool that she has called the Wheel of Consent, which we'll go over in another episode. But today we just wanted to share with you this 3-minute game. So let's describe just how it's played, right?
Yeah.
To begin with.
Yeah. Got a timer, 3 minutes.
Right. So you got a timer, 3 minutes, two people. And for those 3 minutes, one person is the like giver or the action person, and the other is the receiver or like a more passive participant. You can even do this platonically with people who you're comfortable cuddling with and touching in a platonic but sensual way. Because I believe she does this in workshops and whatnot with just, you know, random people. interacting. I don't know. I haven't been to one, but it does not have to be sexual. That's what I'm getting at. But it's fun if it is. Yeah. So you basically take turns offering to each other. So let's say the acting participant, the toucher, says, how would you like me to touch you for 3 minutes? And then the person receiving that touch can say something like, please scratch my back, or please kiss my neck, or bite my toes, or just hold me and cuddle me. And then to ask to do that for those 3 minutes. And in that time, check in with them. Like, do you like the pressure like this? Do you like the speed of the massage like this? And, you know, just sort of really, it's a listening activity to understand, read the cues, and see how detailed you can get with consent from somebody. Because oftentimes your assumptions are totally wrong. Like, I love receiving really deep massages. And so I'm instinctively trying to give that to people. And early on in my current relationship, my partner was just like, I don't like deep massages at all. And I just like was like, what kind of person doesn't like deep massages? It just really blew my mind because I projected my own taste so much onto other people. And he was like, I would prefer if you scratched my back, like very light nails all over the place. And I just cringe thinking about that. I don't want anyone to scratch me. Like, we have just very opposite preferences for our back touches. And it took a lot of getting used to, right? Because we instinctively almost want to give the way we want to receive, because we assume others are just like us.
Yeah.
It's often not the case.
Yeah. That's a really good observation. I never thought about that, because I think that I always like to give the same ways I like to receive.
Right?
It's like, you gotta check yourself, that not everyone likes that. Mm-hmm. But then it's nice when people do, because like, great, I know exactly, I got you.
It's nice when they overlap, right? Yeah. You don't have to think too much. But you should be asking, right? And then you switch for the next 3 minutes and trade it up. So when you ask the other, so when you're also in the acting role, the toucher, you can say, the receiver says, how would you like to touch me for 3 minutes? That way, the person doing the touching isn't just obeying the requests that the receiver made. You can also be asked like how you'd want to touch. So you can say things like, may I feel your arms? Can I explore your back? May I play with your hair? Etc. Don't offer to give anything like a massage. It's just for your pleasure. So the other half of that exercise is exploring what you yourself, the toucher, want to enjoy about the other person's body, you know? So you're not in this like, oh, I'm here to please you because I'm the one touching. You can also be receiving pleasure by the act of touching them. Mm. So if you, you know, if you think about like squeezing a boob, maybe the recipient of the person who's getting their boob squeezed may probably receive pleasure, but the person doing the squeezing receives pleasure too. But who is the one acting upon the other? So it's deceiving that the person doing the touching is just giving pleasure. They can in turn receive as well by extension, by proxy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah. Good job explaining that. Yeah. It seems like it's such an exploratory, you know, game in a sense, but very simple. Mm-hmm. But yet it, you know, what we were talking about earlier, where you're having those realizations, then you see how much you get more aware of how you're projecting your interests, likes, and whatnot to the other person. Mm-hmm. You also may start noticing what are things that I like that I get something out of.
Yeah.
And that you may not want to admit or maybe never thought about either, because it's not just like a one-way action where like I'm scratching your back and then it's good. It's like, oh, actually this turns me on, or this feels really good, or I like the sensation of my nails against someone's back,
right? You
know? So
yeah, how do you think this game would be helpful for, let's say, people pleasers who are uncomfortable receiving themselves? They just always want to be doing for others and giving.
Well, I got one right here. So
do tell.
I'd imagine I'm going to try this game and see how this goes. But
yeah, report back for next episode.
What comes to mind is that I like to be, you know, acts of service is like a love language for me. So I like to be giving. Mm. So I don't want to say it's like being selfish, but it's more like being more present to what I enjoy, instead of so focused on the other person's enjoyment by doing something. Mm. Maybe it's also realizing, and maybe even from the converse of like, how can I sit still just to receive? Because I even wonder, maybe do I open up and let and receive, or am I just over, you know, this is like an over-functioning thing where I am doing so much that it's like I don't give space for the other person to be giving to me.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Like if you're so busy touching your partner, they're like almost put in a reactionary position to be receiving that touch. They don't have the space to be the one acting upon you, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that totally makes sense.
Something that comes to mind. And I think also gives it, it's a reflective to how, I think it also gives us a lens, you know, while this is less of the people pleasing, but more like a lens in how we ask for consent too. Mm. Is being more like okay with asking for things we want and being okay with the no as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a practice in consent as well in this, which I think we all should probably have some awareness of.
Yeah.
And then in that space, because it's a game, it's less of a, you know, it maybe can feel like less of a rejection.
Oh, if like the pressure's off.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're like, hey, can I touch your hair? And you're like, no, I actually rather not. Even though you like giving head scratches or something. And then you're like, okay. And then you just move on. Yeah. And maybe that can be, if you struggle with a no, or maybe rejection in some form or another or similar does not sit with you well, even though it's like, it's nothing with the other person. It's just your own stuff. This could be good practice to sort of detach from the significance of it. Mm-hmm. And then just hearing the no as a no without all the, it, you know, the impact of, oh my gosh, like they don't like me.
Or they don't want me to touch them at all.
Yeah. They don't like my head scratches. Yeah. And everyone else does. You know, it's like, what's wrong with my head scratches? I don't know.
That's legit though. People really do get like their ego in the way of what they think they're good at. And when someone says no, thank you, because I'm like, I think I'm damn good at giving a massage. My partner doesn't want that. He wants my nails. Like, don't appreciate my gifts.
Right. So I give you none of them.
That's right.
I retract my gifts.
And I think also this could be a good way to practice saying no, because if your partner says, may I scratch your head, they're giving you the option to say yes or no without judgment. So if you're the type who struggles with saying clear no's, you're essentially being invited to give a no in this situation. If you don't want to do it, it's a safer space, right? And I think it also removes the outcome-driven perceptions we have around sex. Mm. That like, okay, now that we started touching, it's got to escalate. It's got to turn into penetration and it's got to turn into orgasm. Like, we have to follow some script,
yeah,
right? And we have to do it in a certain amount of time or my partner's going to lose their boner, or like whatever. And that puts a lot of pressure on what could be such an exploration of sensory experiences and touch that you may not normally focus on. Mm. I know there's totally parts of my body that get neglected in service of the like hunger for like climaxing in an experience, you know? And it's like, oh, we don't really slow down and take the time to pay attention to like neglected types of touch or things that are pleasant but not turning on or leading towards orgasm. They kind of get thrown to the wayside, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a shame. So this could be a great way to just have touch with your partner in a non-escalating, non-sexual time, or sexual but not like goal oriented.
Yeah.
That could be
still
really
have
important.
Sex after. We're not saying
totally.
This is your game. You can kind of add some rules to it.
Oh yeah.
But I'm hearing in this, it's like, so, and I guess I didn't realize it earlier that, yeah, this can be great for practicing consent, mm-hmm. Practicing rejection, mm-hmm. and receiving rejection, practicing saying no, practicing saying yes. Mm-hmm. So these are all things that I think to some level we may struggle with, or there's probably one or the other that you're like, you may say yes to everything, no to everything. I don't know what the case is. And it gives you an opportunity to know yourself better about what you like. Also to know what your partner is. Get to check your own projections. Like, I just gave you, I don't know, I wasn't counting, 8 reasons why this is pretty effective. So.
I want to tell you guys real quick about a time when I messed up this game, as I alluded to in the beginning of the show.
Tell us.
So I had like skimmed this website a while back and like bookmarked it for a future episode. I'm like, oh, this sounds really interesting. Yeah, we should totally talk about this. So I had forgotten in the meantime what the like structure or rules of the 3-minute game was. And I had a date with my partner and we're just lounging around. I was like, hey, let's play this 3-minute game. And like, I proceeded to really butcher the explanation while telling him. So our misinterpretation ended up being a completely nothing like, well, not totally the same 3-minute game. So if you want to play the renegade version of the 3-minute game, the unofficial, unapproved method is, so what we ended up interpreting it as was like, all right, so each person can be either giver or receiver during a 3-minute time. You set the timer, and the giver can do whatever they want to the receiver for 3 minutes. And the receiver is not supposed to give back. That was like the crucial thing. And then you flip roles for the next 3 minutes and go back and forth for as long as you want. So it still achieved the purpose of making you focus on the role that you're in that moment. Because for example, like when I was in receiver role, I wanted to like touch back. I wanted to mirror actions. I wanted to balance out the energetic, the direction of the flow of energy in some way. And it was instinctual. And it made me realize, because he would be like, like you're not supposed to. So I kind of like the fun rules that were being quote unquote imposed upon me that like, okay, I'm not supposed to. He's like, I make you sit on your hands or whatever. I'm like, God damn it. So it was, it very much highlighted to me how much I was not used to just being completely passive for 3 fucking minutes. It's interesting, right? And in some ways you can make this playful, like getting your partner really riled up, like doing things that turn them on to the point where they're like writhing and they can't wait to do a certain thing back to you that you know they want to do, but you're not allowed to, it's not your time. And then when the 3-minute timer rings, then you can like flip and be like, oh yeah, it's my time. I can finally do that thing that you like both have been leading up to. I would only recommend doing this version of the game if you know your partner very well.
Yeah.
Obviously, we both would respect each other's no, and we didn't do anything that the other didn't like because we read each other really well. We've known each other for years, and we know what each other's like boundaries are. But it's, you could still do it this way and communicate what you're liking and not as you go along with a trusted partner. So it could be a fun time to like have liberty to torture your partner or have liberty to just like lay back and get all that you want, like, you know. But it very much left the onus of coming up with what type of touch happens to the person who is the toucher for the 3 minutes. So it kind of pushes you into a role of creativity and being the action person for a few minutes straight.
Speaking of liberty, just to add to like, if you want to make this game even more torturous,
level it up, Fernando. So, raise the stakes.
This is what my mind went to. I don't know why it works in mysterious ways, but I thought if we're going to play the game and it'd be like a very intentional escalating, mm-hmm. I think at some point it'd be fun to be like, all right, I'm going to, and whisper in there, you're like, I'm going to read the Constitution to you.
Oh, shit.
Just like something you're like, what? Like, that's so like, that's so one of the driest documents that exists. Mm-hmm. You could say it very like monotonous or, you know, monotone and, I just
but still read it.
Yeah.
But like while you're playing with their genitals.
Yeah.
So they're just like, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. Or getting so riled up at the end, it's like, okay, do you know what I'm going to do right now? I'm like, what? And they're taking clothes, like, I'm going to read the Constitution right now.
Oh, so you're
like,
shit.
What the fuck?
I love that's where your mind goes.
I don't know.
It sounds delightfully torturous.
Yeah. And then just like, yeah, let the cards fall as may way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of got to the point where I wanted to do some other things and I was not patient enough to be restricted by the 3-minute game anymore. And he'd be like, nope, one more round. And he'd set the timer. I'd be like, I'm going to throw that timer out the window. And it just like got to this intensity point that was hilarious for both of us. Oh my God, so cute. You may end up in a really silly, fun place if you end up trying it that way. So enjoy. <Yes. laughs> See, consent is fun. Consent is sexy. Enjoy, you guys. We love recommending books to you on this podcast, and we want to make it super easy for you to use these incredibly helpful resources in your own love life. That's why we've teamed up with Audible, which has thousands of titles of all genres, which you can listen to while driving, cleaning, cooking, or any other activity. We don't judge. If you sign up through our link, you can get one free audiobook and one free month trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/headoverfeels.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in.
To submit your question, go to our website, headoverfeelspod.com.
Also, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at headoverfeelspod.
Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and review in your podcast app of choice.
See you next week.